Hello, and welcome to this session, The Law of Supply. And we'll begin with a quote from the New Testament where Jesus is saying, "Ask, and it shall be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you." And the power of this is, it's real.
I love the way Hollowell started this out. Man is never satisfied. This fact is deplored by many. But God did not intend that man should be forever satisfied. Do you know, as a little kid, my grandmother used to say to me, "You should be satisfied with what you've got." Now, you know, you look at grandmother like she's the deity. She was raisinous. She was always old. And she was all-knowing. I mean, that's the way a little kid grows up. So you should be satisfied. And that idea stuck in my mind. As I began to study this in some depth, I realized Grandma was wrong. That didn't make Grandma a bad person, but she certainly was operating with the wrong idea in that respect. I think you should be happy with what you've got, but never satisfied. See, the law of our being is perpetual increase, progress, and growth. So when one good is realized, another desire for a greater good will develop. And when a higher state is reached, another more glorious state will unfold his vision and urge him even on higher. Hence, the advancing life is the true life, the life that God intended man to live. That's where all the great Olympic records come from. Doesn't matter how fast we run, we know we can run faster, and so someone's going to do it. That's how Roger Bannister broke that 4-minute mile way back in the early 50s. It was believed that a human being could not run a mile in 4 minutes. If you go back in history, they had turned wild animals loose trying to get people to run fast because they were scared. They believed it couldn't be done. Roger Bannister broke it into small parts, and he broke the 4-minute mile. Within a month, someone in Australia was breaking the 4-minute mile. See, the law of good is universal. Are we not seeking good in some form or another? Science and logic alike declare that the universe is filled with the essential substance for every imaginable good that man can imagine, and he's entitled to a full and ever-increasing supply of any and every good he may need or desire. We believe, therefore, that it is right and good for you to seek to gratify all pure desires and ambitions. There's something within you that's going to want you to move forward, reach higher, run faster, sell more, jump higher. And if you really want to feel fulfilled, you've got to let that power be expressed.
That's right. And that it's ever speaking to us. So no matter what good is realized, there's the longing then for a greater good. My granddaughter came to stay with me, and the car I used had a pull-down DVD player, and she had never been in a car that had a DVD player, and she could see her movies, and she was so happy about that. She calls me, "Emma, Emma, I love your car, I love your car." And on the third day, she gets in the car, and she goes, "You know what I wish? I wish this car made cookies and cake." And I thought, it's so perfect. It's happening in a 4-year-old, just what happens in us. No matter what we've realized, there's the pull for the ever upward and more, and to honor that and respect that in yourself. When Jesus said, "Ask and it'll be given to you, seek and you'll find, knock and it'll be opened unto you," this lesson is about learning how to ask appropriately, how to seek in the right way, and how to knock in such a way that we are in harmony with the opening that is right here. How we do that, of course, comes out of our work with the law of thinking, because in the law of thinking, we begin to harmonize our thinking with the law instead of just the form of the experience we've had. We live in the midst of abundance, and every one of us is made of abundance. It is our nature, just as it is the universe's nature. In the Upanishads, 5,000 years old, it is said, "From abundance was scooped abundance, and more abundance remains." Your abundance, your experience of abundance, in no way removes or takes away from anyone else's abundance. But you and I have been trained in this field of human experience to make agreement with lack. And the retraining of our thinking is to remove our agreement with lack and our agreement with the power of circumstances and begin to make agreement with our own nature, the nature of the universe, and the nature of abundance. And that is a retraining process, and it is actually a refrequencing process of the energy, the focus, the vibration that we are coming from. And when you and I begin to realize that what we are seeking to have, we must be of. So in this law of supply, we begin to understand that just as Raymond Hollowell says, what things soever you desire, when you pray, believe that you receive them, you shall have them. How do we believe that we shall have them? We make agreement. And one of the ways I've learned to do that and would encourage you to consider is that if you think about the life of Jesus, since this is the quote that opens our lesson, how many prostitutes did he meet? How many paralytics did he meet? How many people with difficulties, blind people, did he meet? My experience and my understanding would be that he met zero, because he made no agreement with the blindness. He made no agreement with the paralysis. He made no agreement with the difficulty. And I honestly believe that when he looked at the 5,000 that were hungry, if he'd made an agreement with their hunger instead of agreement with the fullness, he stood in the apparent absence of food and made agreement with the abundance and the ability for everyone to be fed. And we call it a miracle of the loaves and fishes. Well, this lesson is about each one of us opening up to the miracle that is seeking us as much as we're seeking it.
I think that there's only one problem in the entire universe, and that problem is ignorance. And the only way to eliminate ignorance is through study. Solomon said, in all our getting, we should get understanding. Because some people do not see an abundance around them and do not enjoy plenty is evidence that they do not understand or do not apply the law. In their blindness, they say that plenty does not exist. And so far as they can see, they may be right. But when they learn to see with their mind's eye, then they're going to realize differently. There's a phase of the law known as demand and supply, which is found in every department of life. Years ago, Thomas Edison resorted to its use when he invented the first electric light. When his carbon lamp was brought to the people as a new kind of lighting, far superior to any method then known, did they really accept it? No, of course not. Many thought it ridiculous and too expensive. They were using candles and oil lamps and some percentage of gas lamps, but such light was plenty good enough. Hence, quite some time elapsed before the public was educated to the advantage of electricity over the old ways. If we go back to the Wright brothers, when they introduced us to a new kingdom, it took 5 years before the public even believed they were in the air. There was one man and four boys that watched that happen. Well, we've got to understand that just because we can't see it with our eyes doesn't mean that it's not there. We want to try and grasp the concept that there's an infinite source of supply, that everything we'll ever want is here, if not in one form or another, and we've got to grasp the idea that we are creative beings. U.S. Anderson wrote it very well in one of his books. He said, when we fully realize that thought causes all, we will know there's never any limits that we ourselves do not impose. When you're working with the demand and supply concept, whenever there is a demand, the supply is going to be there. Now, Mary, I'm going to get you to come back with your agreement concept, because you've got to agree to that concept or it's not going to happen.
That's right. You and I and all of us, we make daily decrees about how things are going to be. And when we decree, I don't know how this is going to happen, we actually disconnect from the authority and the empowerment we have to bring something about. Ask, and it shall be answered. So when we ask, what we're saying is, to this universe of all good, to this universe of pure abundance, I bring a thought form that I am seeking to bring forth as the evidence of the abundance in my particular life. And again, we question that thought, and we ask that it be good for everyone concerned. And once it is, we know that we have engaged the authority and the empowerment that indwells us to bring that about. So ask, believing then, we not only ask that we be shown the evidence of that good, but we actually become one with that good. So when Jesus speaks to the blind man and says, you shall see right now. When Jesus speaks to the paralytic and he says to them, would you be healed? That question is a question I think we can ask ourselves right now. Would I release lack? Would I be willing to have a life where it's ease and there's a flow of energy in my life that creates what I will? Would I be healed? And when the paralytic says to him, yes, I would be healed, Jesus says to him, then take up your bed and walk. And what he's saying here is then live in a new way. Let go of that which has kept you restrained and move forward. And this is what this lesson is about, how we do that.
Raymond Hollowell put it very well. He said, you see, whenever a man has needed a certain thing in life, an idea has been given him in mind. Now think of this. Whenever anybody's needed anything, an idea has been given to them. He was inspired to develop the idea and then materialize it by converting a piece of mud or metal into a usable form. Why did people live so long content with a horse and carriage and not enjoy the automobile? The answer, of course, because they couldn't imagine it. Their minds were not trained to demand such a thing. Was the supply available to build such a machine? It's a good question. The truth is, there was as much supply at hand then as now. In fact, the supply has always been there since the beginning. Thus, it was not God's fault that the auto was so late in coming to man's need. It was man's fault because he'd been so long realizing the need where there is no demand, there's no evidence of supply. Our parents, who had a horse and buggy consciousness, could not attract the new modes of travel until they were able to enlarge their mind to conceive the necessity of the automobile. You know, the secret of the law lies in one's consciousness. A person's life consists not in abundance of things he possesses, but in the consciousness of that which he has. Man possesses the whole world, all its wealth, yet is only able to enjoy what his consciousness permits him to discern. When someone comes to work in our company, if I'm talking to them, one of the first things I'll ask them is, what's the most you've ever earned in a year? Now, I really don't care what the answer is, but I do want to know what the answer is, because what that person's telling me is where their consciousness is at. And then we know how we have to work with them to adjust that consciousness to get them in harmony with the flow of the company. Because we're moving very fast, we don't go slow, we don't take a long time to do anything. We do everything in a hurry, and so we produce in a hurry. And it's important that they fall in line with that so they can move along with us. We don't want to hire any anchors.
That's great. So Hollowell tells this story. He says, somewhere I read a story of a man who lived outside of Pittsburgh and operated a small dairy farm. Day in and day out, he worked laboriously to earn a meager living for himself and his family. One day, several men who had been surveying some adjacent land walked across the pasture land, and when they were crossing a stream of water, they ran through the field. The farmer noticed them stopping, stooping down, studying the slime and the scum that had collected against the crude footbridge he had laid there. But one man had scooped up some water in his hand and apparently drank it. Another collected some water in a canteen he carried attached to a buckle on his belt. The farmer was puzzled and wondered why anyone should be interested in that stuff. Even the cattle had no taste for it, for they pushed the scum aside to drink the clear water. Some weeks later, a man called and offered him a fabulous price for the farm. Why, this man must be crazy, the farmer thought. He could never get his investment back by farming that ground. Had he not tried it for years? He was joyful at the prospects of getting such value and readily sold the farm. He moved to Canada to be near his brother and bought another farm. Wasn't long, however, until some queer contraptions were set up on the field and word spread like wildfire that they had found oil. In a few years, that farm of less than 100 acres produced millions of dollars in oil for its owners. The farmer remained poor and worked hard because he knew only how to scratch the surface and till the soil. Nature had supplied an abundance for the man, but he could only realize a scanty portion. He could see the farm only as acres of stones and dirt. The law is not at fault because we are poor or have to work hard for a living. We will each be poor as long as we demand of life a meager living and see it as a struggle or toil or hardship or limitation. And so as we move forward in the lesson, let's pause for a moment and bring to mind that which you are seeking to bring forth, so that as you apply this understanding, apply it to your own life. Ask, seek, knock, what is it you would like to bring forth? What is it you would like to know? What is it you would like to have? What is it you would like to give? Bring that to mind. Let it be something you really do desire, something you really want your life to be like. And what I will say to you is, if you can't think of anything right now, make something up, because you're going to make it up anyway. You will either live by design or default. You don't get a choice about being a co-creator. You don't get a choice about creating a life. You only get a choice about what life you will create.
Do you know, Mary, there's probably tens of thousands of examples of this all over the world, in any city that you go into, where you'll find two people in the same business. One is winning in a great way and another's losing. In sales organizations, you'll find the two salespeople being managed by the same person. They're selling the same product or service in the same marketplace. One is putting in very little hours, very little effort, and they're earning a ridiculously high income. The other person is working hard and putting in long hours, and they're just getting by. So you have to ask, what is the difference? If they're in the same marketplace, working for the same company, selling the same thing, it has to be in consciousness. All the poverty in the world arises from a poverty consciousness, whether it be collective or individual. Why do millions suffer lack and millions more die yearly in some poor undeveloped area from starvation? I'm told that many of them have never in a whole lifetime enjoyed a full meal. Now think about that. Living for your entire life and never having a full meal. Surely it's not because nature has underestimated the need for so great a people. Surely it's not because there's not enough food to go around. It's because the vision of the people has been limited to such poverty. Ask any farmer about his crops. He'll tell you that his problem's not scarcity, but oversupply. Ask the miner, no matter whether he mines for gold, silver, diamonds, coal, iron, or ore, they're going to tell you that the supply is far greater than the demand. Ask the scientist, and he's going to tell you there's food aplenty. There is more food in the air, yet undiscovered, than we can use. There's more power in a single drop of water or in a lump of sugar than we're going to realize at this moment. We're just starting to understand this. The supply is greater than the demand, and the demand is determined by a person's own thinking. Whenever you demand something, the need is there, if the consciousness is there, and if the consciousness is not, it won't be. The way for you to build your business, the way for you to multiply your income, the way for you to turn your annual income to a monthly income is with you. It goes everywhere you go because it is everywhere. It's omnipresent. It's a matter of tuning into it. And you're going to find that we raise our consciousness, we expand our level of awareness in many different ways. One very important way is by the people you associate with, the books you read, the work you're involved in. You have to have an open mind. A closed mind is going to stop you. You have to have an open mind. There's always a better way to do everything, and you've got to be looking for that better way. Seek and you will find. You're told to look within. Don't look here or there. Look within for the kingdom, and all these things will be added. There's a great painting of the doorway to heaven, and on that painting, there's no doorknob, because the door to heaven is open from within. Your power is within. You've got it within you. If you're trying to see it with your physical eyes, you're going to be miserably disappointed. It isn't going to be there. But if you look with your inner eye of understanding and really take these sessions serious, review them frequently, listen to them every day, read a little every day. I was personally asked just a couple of days ago in a seminar how much photo reading I did, which is the new term for speed reading, versus slow reading. And I smiled and I said, well, I do know how to speed read or photo read. I don't do that much of it. I said, I do a lot of slow reading. I said, I may read a paragraph for a whole day, sometimes for a week or a month, the same paragraph over and over and over and over again. And it's by reading the paragraph over and over again that my consciousness begins to shift. There's a famous quote that you can apply here. When you read a good book through the second time, you don't see something in it you didn't see before. You see something in yourself that wasn't there before. Most of us have a perception problem, and it's because we're conditioned to live through our senses. Just let what we can hear, see, smell, taste, or touch govern us. We've got to move to a higher level. We've got to expand our own consciousness. And that's what these sessions will do. You may question that. Trust me. If you just keep listening to this and keep reading this over and over and over. I'll give you an example. I have been reading Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, the same copy since 1963. If you ever find me, you'll probably find that I have the book with me. Why would I read that? Now, I've got maybe 3,000 or 4,000 books on shelves at home. And I've got them all organized, alphabetical by author, but I carry that one with me all the time. There's so much in the book. There's many old examples and everything, but it's the principle behind it that we've got to lock in on. And the principle behind this in the law of supply is that there is no limit to supply. Everything you'll ever want is here. It's a matter of becoming aware of it.
Yes, we live in an infinite universe, and we get seduced by what we think of as the finite, because we tend to only look with our physical senses. So what we're practicing here is accessing the senses that we have that are beyond the physical realm. And in fact, our physical senses are only expressions of our universal sensing capacity. We don't see because we have eyes, and we don't hear because we have ears. We manifest physical eyes because who we are as part of life itself has a visioning capacity. So the physical eyes are an expression of the capacity of spirit that we have. Our physical ears are an expression of the capacity of hearing that we have. And so there is that in us that is beyond the physical, making contact with that on a daily basis and in a much higher stream of frequency is what produces our awareness change, the paradigm shift Bob is talking about. So Raymond Hollowell suggests to us that the proposition with most of us is that our power of attraction is too weak to meet the demands. So our mind is like a magnet which draws unto itself its own like, type, and kind. A magnet can draw to itself in proportion to its power of magnetism that is generated or collected within itself. Our mental magnet, then, is greatly reduced in strength by our worries and our fears, and our inflow of good is slowly closed off or muted. If our mental force becomes too weakened, we may even repel what little good that is trying to reach us. As we can charge a magnet with electric energy to build up its power of magnetism, so we can our mind. So can our mind be charged with a mental energy that builds up a power of attraction. Isn't that great? See, a magnet is not charged by itself. It's charged with an electric energy by one who understands the operation of how it works. A magnet in the hands of an untrained person would be little changed, but in the care of a trained engineer, it can become a strong force of attraction to do a great good. Likewise, the mind magnet of a person can be stimulated to a strong force of attraction. If it is possible to get help from one who has already had a full understanding of the law and can help that person get a good start, that's what we're doing here. Of course, the mind magnet can be charged with constructive thoughts, but it will take some time for these to be effective. And those of us that are learning who lack perseverance may too readily become discouraged before the work is accomplished. So Hollowell says this, "I always advocate that it is better to get a good start when possible by getting help, rather than to come over the slower and more arduous path of self-education. Then the learner, the student, knowing that the law does work, will be able to make rapid progress in the development and practice." So Bob, he speaks about the decrease of the law of attraction and its power in us when we worry and fret.
Most everyone that studies this material, or material like this, not just necessarily this particular program, what they're really attempting to do is alter their paradigm, alter their conditioned way of thinking, of living. And 90-some percent of us are programmed to let the outside world control us, like we let our sales sheet control what we think of our sales, our bank account control what we think of our finances, the x-ray or the doctor's opinion control what we think of our health. And if we're in a business situation and we're making that transition, we're working from a mental image. We're not working from the physical, because there's generally, on a physical plane, there's a lack insofar as supply. And the person's flipping over now and they're seeing their supply comes from the non-physical, not the physical. However, it's very natural for a person to fret and worry about supply, about where their next dollar is going to come from. And what they've got to understand, that fretting and worrying tend to restrict and limit the supply at hand. In other words, There may be little there. Well, there's going to be a whole lot less if the person's worrying about it. It's like the great sufferer in the Bible, Job. He says, "Lo, the thing I fear has come to visit upon me." Well, when we're fretting and worry, we tend to close off the outflow of substance, whether that flow is small or large. Instead of lifting us out of limitation, instead of improving our conditions and increasing our supply, they drag us deeper into the throes of doubt and fear. Instead of expecting more to follow, we grow tense and anxious, which increases our fear and brings us less and less. It depletes us of energy, really. Instead of tightening up in our thinking, we must relax and be more expanding. Relaxation is probably one of the greatest exercises for the mind that a person can get involved in. In my company, I have been endorsing a young lady, a Canadian lady, who has a company called CalmConfidence.com, and she does phenomenal work. And she has clients that I've led to her, although I have nothing to do with her business, from all over the world. And she trains people to relax. I frequently mention, if an individual would go into As Man Thinketh, James Allen's book, and write out the last chapter on serenity, where he starts by calmness of mind as one of the beautiful jewels of wisdom. It's the result of long and patient effort in self-control. Well, that's what we're referring to here. If we want to make ourselves strong magnets, we've got to be relaxed and we've got to be in charge of our thinking. As you were reading and talking about the magnetism part of this, I was thinking of John Assaraf in the movie The Secret. He says, if we think of ourselves like a magnet, and we are attracting to ourselves whatever we're thinking. And that's exactly what we're doing. So we want to be in a very calm state. We want to be in a calm, confident state. The confidence comes from knowing. So I would recommend anybody go there, go to calmconfidence.com and investigate that, because this is a very critical part of the process of changing our paradigm or changing our thinking, which law of supply is all about. Because the supply is here. There's no lack, there's no limitation. It's all in our own thinking.
And one of the things we can do right wherever we are and do right now that actually helps us stay in a high attractive state of mind is to practice our own relaxation technique by taking a deep breath. We do this sometimes unconsciously. But what happens is when we get afraid or we start worrying or we get tense, we actually take much smaller and less deep breaths. And our eyes may stay open, but we are less awake. And we are less aware, and we've actually decreased our field of magnetism.
Raymond Hollywell tells a beautiful story about getting uptight and being afraid. And I was thinking myself as I was reading it, although this was written over 50 years ago now, it's very true in many cases today. He talks about a man that came to him one day, late in the fall, and expressed his fears pertaining to his job. He pointed out he had been employed for many years in a hotel that, for the first time, had felt the effects of a dull season. And he said it was rumored that the management was going to close down the house and let out the employees until spring. He said, "I feel these folks know there will be a shutdown. They are in the office of the manager. What do you think about it?" "Well, there's only one thing you can do," Hollywell answered. "Go back to your work and realize the law. If the law determines your supply and position, then no one but the law can change it for you." That is such a powerful concept. Now think what he said. He gave the man the advice, "Go back to your work and realize the law. If the law determines your supply and position, then no one but the law can change it for you. If you will realize this and keep it constantly in mind, I shall help you keep the law at work." Now, if the law has another position for you, then the door will open before this one can close. Go back to your work, ignore the rumors, let the others fear and fret, but don't let yourself come under their thought. To prove your faith or confidence in the law, prepare to enter another year's business on your books. Get ready to carry on and expect your work to increase and improve. He went back and did as he was told. When rumors grew to realities, He held firmly to the thoughts of increased work and business. Thus, he was retained during the slack times. He was kept in the office to handle the business. And because of the increased work and responsibility placed upon him, he was given an increase in salary. If he had been allowed to entertain the fears and thoughts of loss and lack, he would have suffered with the rest who were laid off. This is according to the law, and the law is no respecter of persons. If he had been allowed to entertain fears and thoughts of loss and lack, he would have suffered with the rest who were laid off. This is according to the law, and the law is no respecter of persons.
I had a person once share with me that his father was a fourth-generation barber in the Midwest in the late 70s. So his father, his grandfather, his great-grandfather, and great-great-grandfather had run a barbershop, which was they cut men and women's hair, and people from their farms would come in, and it became a community center. And he went home to visit his father when he was in grad school, and his father was depressed and withdrawn, and he finally talked to his father and found out that the father said, you know, we're going out of business. There's a new haircutting company that's moving across America, and they offer $6 haircuts. And he said, there's no way. I can't compete with $6 haircuts. I can't pay the overhead. I can't pay the stylist. We're going out of business. And he was just so depressed and desperate. And the son said, there's got to be an answer here. There can't be a problem without a solution, and there is no lack here. We have to touch that. And the father wasn't really able to tune into that himself, and the son stood for it. The son made agreement with supply. And the son said, come on, Dad, let's just jot down every idea we can about a possible answer to this problem. And the father said, well, the first idea is close the shop. And the son said, well, I'll write that down, but that's not where I'm headed. And he began to generate ideas. Within 10 minutes, one of those ideas jumped off the page. And they decided to implement that idea. They implemented it. And within 6 weeks, not only had the clientele returned that was lost, but they were up 11% from the highest clientele base they'd ever had in the history of the shop. You know what the idea was? They put a big sign on top of the barbershop that said, we fix $6 haircuts. I think the point of this is that the supply is here, but we have to have our signal set to the idea and the feeling and the energy of supply so we can not only be receptive of it, but attractive to it. Robert Collier, in one of his books, tells of an incident that happened in Chicago. A young man, while in an elevator of a large business house, was asked the question, what is your religion? Well, he promptly answered, to the surprise of others, that his religion was Sears, Roebuck & Company. That young man is one of the executives of the company today. Why? Because he touched the law of supply in that he thought solely in terms of his interest. Well, I think that that might be an easy-to-misunderstand idea, that his religion was Sears and Roebuck. But remember, religion, the word religion comes from the Greek word religio, which means to bind together. And what we bind in our thinking, what we bind ourselves to in our believing, is our religion. We can say our religion is one thing, but where our thoughts are bound is our religion. And some of us, our religion is actually scarcity, because we have been bound up in thoughts of lack and limitation.
We want to remember not to confuse money with supply. Money is but one of the numerous means of supply. Money is not the root of evil, but the love of it is. If you concentrate upon money alone and use every means to gather it and hoard it, you're forcing the law to close out other good. If you concentrate on a part and not the whole, you get only a small part. If you concentrate on the whole, you enjoy all the parts. If you love money, use the law supply to amass riches, and you may gain riches. Do you know, I frequently say that most people receive their goods through the keyhole, and what they should do is open the doors and the windows and let it flow in, because there's an abundance of good. Raymond Halliwell mentions that he knew a man who was determined early in life to concentrate on accumulating money. He attained his ambition and became an influential power in his town. He confided in a friend before he died, saying, I did everything I knew to become rich. I gained riches, but I lost the love and companionship of my wife and the joy of being a father to our children. I lost my health, and I'm spending my wealth to regain my health. But somehow, it doesn't respond. Yes, I learned how to get rich, but I never learned how to live. If we love the law, use the law to gain supply and use it wisely, we will satisfy every desire. We'll learn how to live wholesomely, freely, wisely, and there will be no losses. Our lives will be as complete as God, the law, designed them to be. And of course, that's the way we're supposed to live. We're supposed to choose to live in harmony with the laws of the universe, in harmony with God's way. We say it's God's way. It's the law's way. The more we understand it, the more obvious it becomes. And it gets to the point where we wonder, how could we have ever missed it? Because it seems such a natural flow. When we're working against the law, we are really working. When you're working in harmony with the law, it's a nice free flow.
Just like in a river, if you're working with the current, it takes much less personal effort. And the truth is, when we're working against the law, we're using what we call our will power, our human power, and it is minuscule. It is a pygmy version of what each of us is possible of. So now let's get back to Hollywell's words. It follows, therefore, that you can truly and steadily draw into your life any and every form of good you may truly desire, as it is the will of God that you should enjoy every good that wins, promotes happiness and progress. All desire is an expression of the will, while to expect good is to demand good, so that both are necessary to attract supply. I think that's an important line for us to focus on for a minute. All desire is an expression of the will, while to expect good is to demand good, so that both are necessary to attract supply. Now, supply is here, but you and I, in attracting it to ourselves, must have both sides of that coin, the desire and the expectation of the good, or the demand of the good. Therefore, seek to adjust your desire with God's plan, or the law, and expect that every good and only good can reach you. Then nothing but good can come.
All the way through Raymond Hollywell's work, he encourages us to live in harmony with nature's way. He said, nature knows no failure. He also pointed out that nature is a prolific producer of blessings, which she gives freely to mankind, ever producing all things for good and useful purpose. And he pointed out that every individual, therefore, has a natural right to a full supply of every good that he can use or enjoy. That is a beautiful concept when we can understand it. Now, he said, owing, however, to the artificial means man has been taught to use and depend upon for his supply, he's lost sight of the basic truth upon which this particular lesson, the law of supply, is based. Now, at the outset, let us realize that the material world in which we live is a sphere of effects, and that behind these effects is a world of causes. Then recognize that when you desire any particular effect, it is because that specific good is already in existence in the sphere of causes. Then recognize that when you desire any particular effect, this desire is an appearance of an underlying cause. This is the principle upon which our definition of the law of supply is based. It's such a beautiful concept when we can dig into it. Thomas Troward wrote in The Spirit of Opulence that when we're dealing with infinite, you can never take more than your share. So you never have to worry about taking too much and not leaving something for someone else, as we were chastised and programmed with as children. And we want to move away from the competitive plane and move into a creative plane, because that's the only time you're really going to understand the law of supply, in my opinion anyway.
The evolutionary biology is saying that in its own way right now, that in the study of species that survive over dramatic shift and change climactically, it is always the highly cooperative species, not the highly competitive species, that actually cooperates with nature itself, and nature itself cooperates with that. So instead of believing that there's only limited good and we better get our own, is there is an opulence of good, and in fact we contribute to the good when we are in harmony with it and demonstrate that. Jesus said, if I be lifted up, I lift up all others unto me. What he's saying is, as I lift up my consciousness, there is a raising of the consciousness in the entire world.
You know, Mary, I think a good place to bring this particular session in for a landing is where Raymond Hollywell said that you are entitled to all the good you can appropriate and use. And the more good you realize and enjoy, the more you live in accord with the purpose of this ever-present spirit of goodness. Learn to understand how to tap the source of all supply, for there is no limit to the good that may be developed and enjoyed in your life. In truth, Man embodies every law of nature relating to his highest welfare and orderly growth. He is not, therefore, separated from any good thing he may need to enhance his happiness or further his progress. But whether he shall lack or possess that which he needs or requires will be largely determined by the use he makes of his present endowment of intelligence and power. The more man grows in true knowledge, and the more he uses his powers in constructive ways, the more good he will create in the circle of his expression in his own little world. What a beautiful way to leave it. I want to thank you for sharing this lesson with us. This is Bob Proctor.
And Mary Morrissey. Thank you.